The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240. I am your host, Anthony Beers, and I will be with you throughout the 8 o'clock hour, followed by host Andy Sukop in the 9 o'clock hour. I have a special guest, Paul Aston Jr., to discuss Jets football and NFL free agency. He'll be joining us later in the show. And I'll be taking your calls at 631-888-8811. As always, you can listen to tonight's show on the TuneIn app or on WGBB 1240 AM radio. I'd like tonight's opening monologue to be a little out of the ordinary. Obviously, we'll get into discussions like Jason Pierre-Paul's four-year extension with the Giants, NCAA March Madness, and both Mets and Yankees spring training. But the other day, I was listening to the radio, and obviously everyone hears Mike Francesa. Everyone around here knows who Mike Francesa is. And he made an absolute fool of himself on the air on Monday. It was just after Selection Sunday, and he was discussing Maryland and Florida State. And he completely forgot that Maryland is no longer in the ACC. They're in the Big Ten. 6 minutes of dead air later, and throwing his producers under the bus on the air, he had realized his mistake. But it was too late. The Twitter firestorm had already begun. Now, I don't want to kill Mike Francesa for making a mistake on the air. These things happen. I just think that it brings me to my point about egos in the sports industry. Like, why can't he just admit, like everybody else out there, that he wasn't really watching NCAA basketball that closely prior to the beginning of the tournament? He certainly has never had any problems admitting that he doesn't really know hockey, he doesn't really know soccer. So what is this charade? I mean, this guy makes $5 million a year. That's no joke. And ever since him and the Mad Dog split up, this show has just been tons of dead air, him taking callers, hours and hours of him going on during commuter hours. So being in a major spotlight in New York during commuter hours is something I've dreamed of. I mean, you ever like look around during, whether you're driving, whether you're on the train, whether you're on a subway, the millions of New Yorkers in the metropolitan area just grinding out there, doing whatever they can to make their money and put their bread on the table. But if I have to, and I've always thought it would be incredible to be a person that those people listen to routinely. Take them a little out of that stressful routine of getting into the city, into work, whatever they're doing, and just let them think about the game, let them think about the sports. Maybe even let them call in and talk about it. But if I have to sell my soul pretending to be an absolute expert towards people that, like, let's say I made it. If I'm have to sell my soul and pretend to be an absolute expert towards people that I was once in the exact situation that they're in, like Mike Francesa, for example, I'm a total hypocrite. Like, in other words, Mike Francesa was a total hypocrite. Or should I say Mike from Long Beach? He once sat in the exact chair that I'm sitting in. He once sat in the exact chair that a lot of these listeners, that if you're listening, I appreciate it, that you're sitting in. So I just want to make that point that in this industry, it's very easy to act like you know everything. You want to act like you know everything about sports. Obviously, you have to be prepared. You have to know what you're talking about. But that's not what it's all about. It's about having confidence in what you're saying. It's about having confidence that you enjoy your career. And it's about putting people away from that grind of the commute or that grind of everyday life, whatever it may be. That's why I've always wanted to do this. Not only because I've always loved sports, not only because I've always had a great bond with my family watching sports, but because I'd like to be able to reach people that I normally wouldn't be able to reach in a way that I'm confident I'd be good at. So if I ever make a mistake on air, I'm sure I'm going to make plenty tonight. I'm not going to kill myself. I'll admit when I was wrong. And I hope the $5 million man, Mike Francesa, can agree to that at least some point. Now, speaking of egos, Matt Harvey, pitcher for the New York Mets, he's got beamers. He's been seen smoking cigarettes. And now, lately, he's dating. Now, the latest headline is he's dating Andre Lima. And if you're like me and you had to Google her and you didn't know who she was, she's a Victoria's Secret model. He was seen making out with her at a restaurant. and he's putting himself out there in the major spotlight once again. Obviously, everyone knows who Matt Harvey is, but this to me doesn't sit right with me. And it's not because I don't think he has the right to do that. I don't care that he smokes cigarettes. I don't care that he's dating Andre Lima. I don't care what kind of car he drives. But it's just so silly to me that you might set up yourself for a harder fall. Matt Harvey, we haven't seen it in 2 years. You know, last year he had an ERA over 5. He was 7-10. And then he had surgery. Now he's 0-3 in spring training with an ERA over 7. Do you really want to be putting yourself out there like that? That to me is a sign of immaturity. And that to me is a huge risk. To me, it's the same thing as the Giants wide receivers being seen on a boat during the playoffs. Like, why draw that attention to yourself if you don't have to? Why can't you go somewhere private? Why do you have to put yourself out there like that? I guess, you know, I don't mind them going to a restaurant. I don't want to sound like some sort of dictator. But you have to understand how that looks. And Matt Harvey, it seems like he doesn't care. And a part of me respects that, but a larger part of me worries about that because we haven't seen it. And if there's any skeleton in the Mets closet, it's Matt Harvey's pitching performance this season. No one knows how he's going to turn out. And that kind of makes me think, obviously, the Mets have a lot of hopes in 2017. But what could go wrong? That's the better way to look at it. Obviously, we can talk about the good. We can talk about the pitching staff. We can talk about how there's a lot of returning players. We can talk about how they are in the playoffs the last 2 years. They're trying to go to the playoffs for the third straight year for the first time in Mets history. We can talk about all that positive stuff. But to me, when the better conversation in spring, obviously everyone's an optimist. But if you could think about what could go wrong, that's how you think like a GM. That's how you think like an owner. That's how you think like someone who really wants to be prepared for any dire situation that may occur. Now, obviously, number one on the list of things that could go wrong for the New York Mets is David Wright. Now, David Wright, if you haven't heard, he's already injured. He already screwed up his neck. He already is having problems throwing the ball to first. This is different year, same story for the Mets fans that have endured David Wright's injury woes and struggles and unfortunate end to what has been an overall great Mets career. But I think the Mets are kind of in this tough spot where they don't really know what to do with him. David Wright obviously is on the middle of a huge contract, but he can't play. Let's just be frank. Putting him on the field is risky and somewhat silly. Unless you're like 15 games up and the division's a joke, and which is unlikely, and you want to just throw him out there for some glory games, maybe make him some sort of a player's coach, it's fine with me. But this guy cannot play frequently. This guy cannot take time away from other players. Last year before his injury, he took time away from other players. And he still batted third. That can't happen. That's ridiculous. That's something that Mets fans should not accept. So David Wright, great guy, one of the best Mets of all time. I'd want his number retired for the New York Mets. And you know what? He's pushing the Hall of Fame discussion. It's close. He's got a lot of Mets records, but it's hard. Unfortunately, injuries really derailed his potential at breaking MLB records. But he'd have a shot, maybe somewhere down the road. But the point is, David Wright this year, right now, it can't happen. You have to let it go. Now, people saying David Wright should walk away from the Mets, that's stupid. Of course he's a player. Of course he's got pride. Of course he's going to put in every ounce of strength that he can to get back there on the field. But the Mets should be clear about what they plan to do with him. This sort of like middle ground, like, we'll wait for him to come back. We love David. He's our guy. No. Draw the line in the sand. David Wright is not the David Wright you remember. David Wright cannot play third base. And David Wright probably can't swing a bat. And David Wright also can't even come off the bench, because it takes him 45 minutes to loosen up his back and warm up because he's had so many surgeries and injuries. So this to me is a man's man. I love the guy. I kiss the ground he walks on. But we can't allow this to derail our 2017 season because the Mets have to be thinking big thoughts this year. David Wright, sorry. It's time to move on. Now, the other obvious truth is that the Nationals might be better than the Mets. Now, it's not a guarantee, so I shouldn't say it's obvious. But it's obviously up in the air between those two teams. The Nationals have two bona fide hitting stars in Daniel Murphy and Bryce Harper. The Mets, on the other hand, obviously Cespedes is a star. But do they really have that second bat that you know is a star as well? They'll get good performances out of guys. Neil Walker can rake when he's hot. Lucas Duda sometimes for a month can hit 10 home runs in a month. And not to mention Granderson, another streaky player, but that's just it. All these guys are streaking up and down, right? We don't really have that second hitting star, which is why Sandy Alderson so desperately tried to trade for Andrew McCutchen. And you got to keep an eye on the Pirates season, because who knows, maybe he'll be available for the trade deadline. You got to hope Jay Bruce can be that second bat, but we haven't seen it yet, so we have to wait and see. The Nationals might be better. They definitely have a better lineup. The Mets have more depth at pitching, and they have better pitching overall. But the Nationals are still dangerous. The Nationals still have Strasburg. The Nationals are still someone to look out for. So, I don't know. I don't think... Oh, and Scherzer. That's the other guy's name I couldn't recall off the top of my head. Scherzer. The Nationals have Scherzer and Strasburg. Those are two dynamite pitchers that the Mets have a hard time touching. I mean, I cringe every time I have to face Scherzer. So, frankly, there's no reason to assume the Mets are winning the NL East. It'd be more favorable to them because the one play-in game wild card can be a disaster. We all learned that last year. So you never know. Mets also have infield issues. You never know who's playing what. Jose Reyes should be playing third. Neil Walker should be playing second. Asdrubal Cabrera should be playing short. We still don't really know who's playing first. It'll probably end up being Lucas Duda. But I think they got to spread things around. They got to find a way for Wilmer Flores to play. Reyes can occasionally play short. Flores can essentially play all those positions. And it's not clear. And the biggest weakness the Mets actually have is catcher. So Darno's having a good spring. Let's hope that stays. And even though the Mets have great starting pitching, Steven Matz had problems with injuries. Zach Wheeler, we haven't seen him in forever because of injuries. Matt Harvey, also, as I mentioned earlier in the show, surgeries, problems staying on the field. We'll see. So, those are my thoughts on the Mets. I think they can be a great team this year. I think this has a potential to be a special year. But I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid in March. I don't want to just assume they're going to dominate. Because seasons play out so differently than how you imagine them. Last night, the USA defeated the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic 6-3. They're playing the undefeated Japan on Tuesday at 9 o'clock. That's in Los Angeles. That should be good. I was enjoying the World Baseball Classic a little bit. I think it's a little silly that professionals are allowed to play. I know that maybe doesn't sit right with a lot of people, but I think of it, back in the day, the Olympics weren't allowed to have professionals. Like, I would really enjoy Olympic basketball a lot more if it wasn't the USA Dream Team. And I feel the same way about the World Baseball Classic. I wish these were kids trying to put themselves out there. I'd find more joy out of it, because someone's going to get hurt. And not to mention two USA stars like Noah Syndergaard and Bryce Harper aren't even interested in playing because their priority is the MLB. And they don't have a contract, or if they have a contract, they want another one. So we'll see. Now on the Yankees, this is clearly that sort of in-between year for them, but they have a plan. If you're a Yankee fan, you have to like the plan. Starting pitching is still not good. You got Tanaka, you got Pineda, you got CeCe, you got Severino, and you got Mitchell. That's not really impressive. CeCe as your possible third starter, that's cringeworthy, especially at this point of his career. But they have a good bullpen. It's exciting. They only want to get 4 or 5 innings out of their starters and then go to that monster bullpen, especially because they got Chapman back to that big money. And, of course, Yankee fans understand they're a couple years away. And in 2 years, of course, cue the Bryce Harper rumors. He's a free agent. He'll be a free agent in 2 years, and it seems like he wants a 10-year, $400 million deal. So if there's ever a team that's going to pull that cord, sign that check, it's New York Yankees. So high hopes for the Mets, decent hopes for the Yanks. In a good situation, they might make the playoffs, but they're not a World Series contender. The Mets, they're a World Series contender. So Opening day is not too far away, April 3rd for the Mets, 1 o'clock at Citi Field. Can't come soon enough. Finally felt a little bit of that warm spring air today. But obviously the big topic that everybody's talking about right now and everyone's enjoying is the NCAA tournament. North Carolina just went up 70-65 with 10 seconds left against Arkansas. That's the second round of the tournament. That was a real scare. We almost lost another number one in the second round. Obviously, we lost Villanova. They lost to Wisconsin in an unbelievable three-point upset. Everyone's complaining about the seeding. Everyone's complaining about the proper rankings. I think it's silly. I think all of it's nothing to complain about. When you have 64 teams, 68 if you count the play-ins, you can't possibly rank them in a way that's fair. You can have an idea. You can have a ballpark guess. But to actually know the exact placement of every team, every seed, of course there's going to be mistakes. It's a flawed process. Human error exists. Who are we to assume that the brackets are going to be perfect every year? If the brackets were perfect, it'd be four number ones in the final four every year. It'd be that simple. There's upsets. There's things that happen. And as we see right now, a lot is going on in the NCAA tournament. Now, let me make something clear. Obviously, this kind of alludes to my previous point that I made about Mike Francesa and everybody kind of acting like they know everything about college sports. Even if you're a huge college basketball fan, even if you follow it year-round, you can't really fully predict or understand what's really going on. You could probably be very aware of what's going on within a conference, but to be fully aware of the extent of 64 teams, who has the space for that? If you work in sports, I mean, you're watching it year-round maybe, but there's other things you got to be concerned about too. Like, don't you got to eat? Don't you got a family? We're talking about 68 teams, and it changes every year, naturally due to seniors graduating. So, I don't know. I think it's silly for people to think like they know what they're talking about. And speaking of upsets, upset alert, Rhode Island is up 46-38 over Oregon at halftime. Rhode Island's an 11, Oregon's a 3. Rhode Island might be the sweetheart that everyone loves, not to mention Xavier. They're in the Sweet 16 already. So, and they didn't just get into the Sweet 16 by a hair. They crushed Florida State 91-66. So I'm enjoying the tournament. I'm enjoying the atmosphere. But I'm not going to pretend to be some expert. I mean, please. I got UNC in my Final Four. They might make it. I had Villanova. They're already toast. I had Notre Dame. They're already toast. And I had Louisville, they're already toast. So I had three out of my four already crushed. I mean, what am I going to get upset about that? Come on. Now, I think it's worth mentioning that recently it kind of feels like the NBA took a back seat to the NCAA. Now, let me explain. Last Sunday in prime time, or maybe last Saturday, it was a prime time game. The Spurs were playing the Warriors, and it was a big game. It was for the number one seed in the conference, essentially, because this game could have given it to the Spurs if they won, and the Spurs did end up winning. But the Warriors sat their starters, not just a couple guys, their starters. The game was obviously in San Antonio, so they can get away with that a little more, but that's a bad look, isn't it? For a nationally televised game, the amount of money the NBA has on these games, the TV deals, the cameras, the action, the entertainment, the brands. For business, it's a disgusting look. And then, fast forward to yesterday, last night, the Cavs are playing the Clippers in primetime. LeBron James, Kevin Love, they're not playing. LeBron's seen on the sidelines with a cup of coffee. He looked like he couldn't have possibly been more relaxed. Now, I got nothing against LeBron having a coffee if it's his night off, but it's a crazy image that he's obviously aware of. He's used to being massively consumed. So, is it a coincidence that these nationally broadcasted games that turn out to be ripoffs are right during the NCAA tournament? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm not a conspiracy guy, but that's something to be. That's at least peculiar, right? Now, to me, though, if this continues to happen, obviously Greg Popovich used to do this with the San Antonio Spurs from time to time throughout his career there. Even forget during March Madness or not, he would just rest his players in games that he felt they deserved a night off. It's an 82-game season, and his goal is to win a championship. Can you really fault him for it? But then there's the other side of it, where if you're a fan and you pay hard-earned money to go see your favorite player or your team face an exciting team, what if you were a Golden State Warriors fan and you travel all the way to San Antonio, you flew to Texas to watch that game, and you don't even see Steph Curry? That'd be a bummer. I'd want my money back. So this is what kind of everyone is up in arms about, especially with the NBA's quality issue. But to me, this isn't just a quality issue. This is a quality versus quantity type deal. Now, obviously, the NBA just signed a new CBA. They got these guys making major big bucks, these players now, more than ever. So, obviously, if you're a coach, you want to protect your players' health, and you want to think of the big picture, so I don't really have an exact answer. But if the NBA wants more quality games, and they want fans getting the value for their dollar, they got to sacrifice more overall dollars and have a shorter season. So the NBA would never do that. They would never lose money just to improve the quality of the product. They're too much about entertainment. But that, to me, is the simple solution. 82 games is too many games. There's so many teams that this season's been over for months. The Knicks, the Sixers, the Nets. I mean, it's gross that they're even still playing. They should just quit. If there's ever a team that should be benched, it's the Knicks. And not for the good reasons. But come on. 82 games? Think about how nice it would be if the season started on Christmas morning. You remember that lockout shortened season a few years ago? That essentially is the reason they were able to sign the CBA last year with Adam Silver? 60-something games? Kind of worked. And it started on Christmas morning. If they did that every year, that'd be a cool ritual. Get up and embrace the basketball season. I don't know, maybe that's just me. But in today's world, you can't see the NBA making that type of enormous sacrifice for the quality of the game. I could see the NHL doing it. I might see the MLB doing it. Can't see the NFL doing it. And obviously, like I said, don't see the NBA doing it. But will Adam Silver ever speak on this? He hasn't said a word yet, but it's definitely dominating his life right now. There's no question. Now, I mentioned a sad sack of losers, a.k.a. the Knicks. They're at an all-time low. They lost to the Nets, for crying out loud. Gave 120 points to the Nets. It's bad. Phil Jackson, since he's been team president, 76-157. James Dolan is getting in fights with former players, causing a national ruckus that could be heard around the world, like he did with Charles Oakley. Carmelo Anthony, every story before the trade deadline was, is he going to lift his trade clause? Is he not going to lift his trade clause? It's enough to make a man crazy. Enough to make anyone crazy, any fan crazy. So obviously the Knicks have been royally messed up for a very long time. But the order of blame to me is so clear. Number one on my order of Knicks blame, James Dolan. No question, James Dolan is number one. He's been a hideous owner. He's the reason the Knicks overtraded for Carmelo Anthony. He's the reason that whole Isaiah Thomas scandal came to light, even when they made him from president to head coach. He's the reason the whole Charles Oakley thing just went down. He's the reason he overpaid Phil Jackson some ridiculous deal that allows him to do whatever he wants, and you never see him actually working. Has anybody seen Phil Jackson in any of these March Madness games? He should be there, but he doesn't have to because he's got a ridiculous $63 million contract when he had never even done the job before as a president. So number two might surprise you. I think most people would say Phil Jackson is their number two. I think Phil Jackson at least has enough success in his life, whether it was as a president or not, for him to not be number two on my list. I got Carmelo Anthony as my number two. Dude, we traded for you between the 2010 and 11 season. You didn't just want to get traded. You demanded to get traded. You disrupted the whole thing. Yes, our owner was stupid enough to meddle with our GM and head coach to do that. Sorry, Donnie Walsh, and sorry, Mike D'Antoni, but it's true. Everyone knows this now. So they overtraded for Melo, lost a lot of their young developing players, and they had to start over. That set them back a few years. And everyone knew Amari Stoudemire's time was limited at that point anyway, so the team wasn't so great for a while. Sure, they made the playoffs, but they were never good. So then the team actually has to rebuild, and Melo is still there. And what do they decide to do? They give Melo a $120 million contract and a no-trade clause. I don't know if James Dolan was involved in that, because he said Phil Jackson was involved in everything, but I can totally see James Dolan, when he asked Phil Jackson to be the president, by the way, you got to keep Melo here, and you got to pay him handsomely. He's good for the guard, and a lot of people come here to see him. He's a big part of why we make money here. He's got a foundation that appeals to a lot of people. So, yeah, if you want the job, just it's part of the clause. Totally could see it. Not that we know, but it just stinks of James Dolan. I can sense it. So here we have Carmelo Anthony pouting constantly. Everything that's bad is horrible because of him. He doesn't know what to say to the media ever. Now, he might not even be a bad guy, but it's so clear that he can't win here, and it's so clear that the Knicks were desperate to get rid of him, and they still couldn't. That's got to be dysfunctional. Why don't you just sit him? That's a hell of a way to get a guy to lift the no-trade clause. Sit him down. If you don't play him, how soon do he want out? How soon till he demands it? And while you're at it, sit Derrick Rose. He's not going to be here next year. Those two guys are the biggest problem childs for the Knicks right now. Get them out. I don't care how talented they were, how talented they will be again. They're not for us. They can't win in New York. We don't want them. If anyone even thinks about mentioning a deal for Derrick Rose for next season because he'll be a free agent, just throw him out of the room. Now, lastly, before we go to a quick break, Phil Jackson, he's my number three, obviously. So not because he hasn't been here long enough to be the one or two. It's really that simple. Dolan's been here longest. He's number one. Melo's been here the second longest. He's number two. Jackson's been here the third longest. He's number three. Those are the three power figures that are constantly battling in New York, and it's a huge, huge part of the problem. I think if you sit Melo and you sit Rose, it's a message to free agents that, sure, maybe it's hard to play here if you're a star, but frankly, I think it also tells them we're about business. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We still got to talk some football. Not to mention my friend Paul will be joining us very shortly. He works for ESPN Radio. That's Paul Esten Jr. He's got a lot to say about his beloved Jets. But before that, the Giants when we come back. Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony Beers. This is Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak.
capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. Please feel free to give us a call at 631-888-8811. Chime in on anything you wish. We've talked Mets, we've talked Yankees, we've talked NCAA, we've talked NBA, we've talked Knicks. But now it's time for football. And if you want to go back and call in and talk about any of those things, feel free. But I'm going to move on to the Giants at this particular moment. Because Jason Pierre-Paul made headlines when he signed his four-year extension for $62 million. And let me just say I don't like it. Now, there's sort of this general consensus among Giants fans at this moment that it's smart for JPP to sign the extension because it restructures the salary cap. And rather than having the $17 million franchise tag they had last year, they can have some room for work and sign other players. Some room to work with, excuse me. They're going to get about $4 million extra for this season alone. So that to me is not really a lot. To most Giants fans, obviously, it's not a lot. That wouldn't be like some sort of star they could steal with that type of money. Now, also, JPP is 28 years old. You sign him for four more years. He's had a fair share of injuries. And don't get me wrong, JPP was a beast last year. But he got hurt. He had sports hernia surgery, only played 12 games, managed to get 7 sacks and 53 total tackles. But year before that, obviously, was the firework incident. He only played 8 games, only got 1 sack because he wasn't really healthy. Year before that, he played 16 games, 12 and a half sacks, obviously pretty good. Year before that, 11 games, only 2 sacks. Only 27 total tackles, injury-shortened season. So he's had a fair share of injuries. But it's not all about getting sacked. It's not all about getting pressure. There's some guys that he can't necessarily beat. Like, JPP can dominate some games and then really struggle, like he does against the Dallas Cowboys. I haven't seen him really dominate a Cowboys game since the Cowboys improved their offensive line. And to be fair, it's a tough matchup. And I have nothing against JPP's effort or character. He actually showed a lot of resilience after that hand injury. But at 28 years old for four more years, I mean, is he really going to be that impactful in his fourth year of that deal when he's 32? Justin Tuck retired at age 32. And in the 2012 season, Justin Tuck was 29. He started to fade. And in 2013, at 30, the Giants and him parted ways. Obviously, Tuck went to the Raiders after that. But I get that they're two different guys, but it just strikes me as similar. Tuck started to have problems with the shoulder. He started to slow down. Giants are usually pretty good at knowing when a guy's out of gas, like they were with Tuck, like they were with OC. They'll welcome back JPP because they want to keep this group together. But everyone's under the impression that Giants are going to be able to sign Jonathan Hankins. If he really wants what he's worth, he can't get it here. And he deserves more money than the Giants can offer him. Now, if he wants to be a Giant, God bless the man, but it's going to be hard to keep this entire defensive line together. Now, and that also brings me to my next point about this kind of like universal consensus. Obviously, a lot of Giants fans felt that way about the cap space. But the next Giants fans' universal thought is left tackle is a disaster. Now, don't get me wrong, Ereck Flowers looked like crap several games last year, especially against the Dallas Cowboys. Even though the Giants were able to squeak out a 10-7 win, Eli was getting killed. He looked horrible against the Packers. He looked bad against the Redskins. I'm sure there are other moments that are slipping my mind at the moment, but he looked bad enough times for everyone to know that, yeah, he looked bad. Now, he's been in the league 2 years, Ereck Flowers. It's hard to come in there as a draft pick and immediately play at left tackle and protect a franchise quarterback like Eli Manning's blind side. But are we really sure, 100% positive, that Ereck Flowers can't get better? Seriously? You hang guy out to dry after two seasons? Don't get me wrong, they've been two horrible seasons. I don't even know if I should say horrible. I thought in his first season he was okay towards the end of it. Giants weren't good. That was the bigger problem. Last year, his weaknesses were more exploited because the Giants had improved in other areas. But Bobby Hart, he's not very good. Justin Pugh missed games because of injury. And they didn't really have any good backs. Rashad Jennings was not good last year. Paul Perkins only showed up later in the year and started to make some plays. Orleans Darko was out for most of the year, even though the Giants re-signed him to a one-year deal. So the Giants' up-front running game was stinky, and the passing game was good solely because of Eli Manning and Odell Beckham. Don't get me wrong, I like Sterling Shepard, but Victor Cruz did nothing of real significance. And Shepard, he had some games where he'd kind of disappear. So the offense is one-dimensional. Everyone knows your whole game plan is throw the ball to Odell. Giants offense has nowhere to really go but up, in theory. Now, I thought that last year when they got rid of Reuben Randall and they improved in other areas, but hell, I was wrong. So that's kind of the point. These general consensuses, like last year the general consensus was Reuben Randall's gone. Obviously the receivers will be better. He's a problem. Sterling Shepard has to be better than Reuben Randall. And yeah, I take Sterling Shepard over Reuben Randall any day of the week. But the Giants' pass game was better 2 years ago. What does that tell you? That football is a funny game. Now, I still think Ereck Flowers can get it together. Shed a couple pounds. Work on your footwork. You're as big as a house. You tell me without some elbow grease and determination, Ereck Flowers can't figure this thing out? I'd give him one more shot. And if he comes out looking like crap again, obviously you shift him over to the right side. But Giants fans being excited about DJ Fluker means they know nothing about the signing. Offensive tackle from the San Diego Chargers converted to guard. Basically, if Ereck Flowers has a bad year this year and they have to shift him to the right side and then the Giants release him and then he signs somewhere else, that's DJ Fluker. That's the scenario he'll be in. Or the scenario Fluker was it. So, I'm just going to say that I'll give Flowers 4 or 5 games, regular season games, at the position, barring any unforeseen circumstances. And we'll see how it works out. Not to mention, we still have the draft. Giants fans still have to see who the Giants draft. If they go out there and get another stud left tackle, let's have competition. Maybe that'll be the thing that exposes Flowers' potential greatness. And I use the word greatness lightly, but potential. So, Giants, you got to feel good. Brandon Marshall, obviously, is a big signing. But they went for the flashy, impactful player as opposed to the greater need, which is left tackle and tight end. So we'll see what they do in the draft. Now, I'm bringing in my next guest, Paul Esten Jr., works for ESPN Radio, friend of mine, also works for Sports War Radio, and I believe his self-proclaimed title is biggest Jets fan on the planet. Paul, is that true?
That's 100% true, and I don't know how many people I'm fighting for with that title, but I know that is the title in which I put on my Twitter bio.
Right. Now, Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for bringing me on the show, Anthony. You're a good friend of mine, and anytime I can appear on the airwaves, I really appreciate it.
Hey, right back at you, Paul. Right back at you. Now, obviously, Damon Harrison last year, Brandon Marshall this year, even Geno Smith this year, and even possibly, I have heard rumors, Nick Mangold this year. What is it with these Jets players putting on the Giants blue, and how does it make you feel personally?
Yeah, it's been quite the transfer pipe over the last, it seems like, 2 or 3 years, where former Jets are now jumping over to the Giants. And, you know, why are they doing this? It seems simple for the guys, the older veteran players like a Brandon Marshall, potentially a Nick Mangold. The Geno Smith, I guess, is somewhat of an outlier there. But Brandon Marshall, with his inside the NFL responsibilities, even though he posted after the signing that he would be doing less of those media opportunities. That made sense for him to go to a contender. It seems like that was something he wanted to do. We'll talk about the Jets later. But Brandon Marshall coming there, I think it's a phenomenal move. It's great for Brandon Marshall. I think personally, maybe this is a hot take. I think it gives the Giants one of the best wide receiving trios I've seen in the 21st century. I think it's a phenomenal group that they have there. In terms of Geno Smith, I think, let's be honest, I think he's a way more talented Ryan Nassib, so I think they improve the quarterback position. I know they also brought in Josh Johnson, so they're going to have a little bit of a competition there, but Geno is a very viable backup despite the turnovers he's had. He's had experience in this league. So I think that was a great addition. And Damon Harrison, I'm going to stick by this stance. Damon Harrison, I said when he signed with the Giants, you guys or the Giants overpaid for him. And right. That's fine to overpay for a player because he was an All-Pro last year, as Giant fans love to remind me on Twitter. But I continue to stand by the fact that he's a two-down player, but he is a Pro Bowl All-Pro level player, and the Giants have the cap room to afford a guy of that nature. So for me personally, Jets going over to the Giants, to me, the ultimate thing that I said after Brandon Marshall signed there, well, at least it wasn't the Patriots, and when the Giants played the Patriots in the Super Bowl twice in the last decade, I said, well, at least the Patriots didn't win, and that's the same feelings I have here.
Fair enough. I mean, Damon Harrison, obviously they overpaid for him, as they overpaid for Vernon, and may have even overpaid for Jenkins, but the impact they had was so drastically important to the Giants last year. But will it be in years 4 and 5 of their contract? Hey, that remains to be seen. But it was an immediate impact, an immediate need, and not only that, Harrison brings a crazy amount of veteran leadership to the Giants that was much needed, especially on the defensive end. Now, speaking of leadership, I've heard a lot of maybe Jets fans or people on Twitter, Brandon Marshall, saying that Brandon Marshall is a leader, that sort of vocal guy that the Giants need. Now, I have a hard time really grasping the concept of him as a leader. He's obviously a well-spoken individual. I've heard him in interviews. Obviously, I've heard him on Inside the NFL as well. But this is his fifth team. Now, he seems to have grown. He seems to have matured. But it's hard for me to really embrace that you're a great locker room guy if, A, you've never been to the playoffs in your career, and, B, this is your fifth team. So Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham together, thoughts on that amount of personality, and will Ben McAdoo and Eli Manning be able to handle it?
That is a perfectly understandable analysis of Brandon Marshall, and I had a very similar analysis before he came on my team that I cover, the New York Jets, and that to me is the key. You know, we've heard in the past that guys like Michael Irvin, they're the worst player I've ever played against and the best teammate I ever had. And that's kind of the analysis I have with Brandon Marshall. And for me, that's where he, you know, I feel like the bark is worse than the bite in these scenarios. I think that Brandon Marshall is almost the perfect addition to this Giants secondary because, or wide receiver core rather, because Odell Beckham Jr., as this outspoken guy, was forced to be the guy. And, I mean, he kind of put the target on his own back with some of his stances and things that he said and some of his actions. But Brandon Marshall coming in, he's got a lot left in the tank. He is a number one receiver. He's had success throughout this league. And I think that he's going to be a guy that Odell Beckham Jr. can lean on outside of any receiver that's ever been in the same core as Odell Beckham Jr. I think he's going to provide something Victor Cruz really couldn't from that standpoint, a leadership standpoint, right, in bringing him in. But you make good points. He's been on several different teams throughout his career, and for one reason or another, he left. The Chicago Bears claimed it was some sort of a locker room cancer. You saw it with the Broncos, him punting footballs, and then him coming out a couple years ago with his mental disorder in terms of he can't really control his emotions. I watched a few documentaries on it to try to understand the person of Brandon Marshall a little bit better. And this is a very passionate player, and sometimes passion can be misconstrued for ego and attitude, but this guy's all about winning. And for a guy that's never been to the playoffs, I think that you're going to get the best Brandon Marshall that ever is possible in his career from the standpoint that he has that piece of meat hanging in front of him. A lot of players like Adrian Peterson, who won the MVP award, and they're like, what more does he have left? What more is he chasing? A lot of people say the Super Bowl title. For Brandon Marshall, he's never been to the playoffs. So So that's the piece of meat that's hanging in front of him. And you look at the other big-time Giants on the team that have not only been to the playoffs but have had Super Bowl success. Look at Eli Manning as his quarterback, a guy who's going to throw him the ball, and throughout his career, the most accomplished quarterback that he's ever had in his career. So I don't think you guys are going to have any problems, at least in year one, because when you win, you don't hear a lot of the nonsense.
That is for sure. Now, you mentioned nonsense, so that kind of leads me very well into my next question. What is the Jets' plan exactly? And I'll follow that question with another question. Let's say you're the GM, you're in the chair, right now, today, what would your plan be to sort of right this ship?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, but the Jets' plan is tanking this season. There's no question about it. We've seen the purge that has occurred, and the team that will line up this September will be almost unrecognizable. That's the standpoint where we've gotten longest-tenured guys on the teams, from last year losing to Brickashaw Ferguson to losing Nick Mangold, Darrell Revis, and David Harris was going to be on the block if they were able to acquire Dante Hightower, which and to me, this is the direction of the team. They've committed to tanking with all the releases that they've made. They've basically raised the white flag, in terms of competition for the 2017 season, which to me makes exact sense for why free agents like Tony Jefferson and Dante Hightower said thanks, but no thanks to the team. And I want to address this report that came out. A lot of reports came out after that the Jets were worried about the physical and Dante Hightower and didn't want to extend the contract offer anymore. And I just want to clear that up and say that's a load of garbage. I think the team was trying to save face, and they were simply rejected by some of these top free agents, and understandably so. It's because this team is tanking. These guys want to play for contenders. Brandon Marshall reportedly had a contract extension on the table, and he also said thanks but no thanks, because this team is doing a complete rebuild. So if I'm sitting in the GM chair, it's a very similar plan, but I'm going to be very open about it. Woody Johnson, after the season, issued no playoff mandate in terms of Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan and this regime continuing on. There's no playoff mandate. So for me, when I saw ESPN reporter Rich Cimini saying that if Todd Bowles encounters another 5-11 season, he could be toast, to me that doesn't make any sense. Why do you eradicate the roster of viable talent? And then other guys could disappear off this year's team, like Eric Decker when he's healthy. They just can't release him right now because he's injured, right, and they'd have to owe him more money. So for me, the plan would be to blow up this team but keep the regime in place. I trust Todd Bowles. I trust Mike Maccagnan. This is a brand-new franchise that they're dealing with. And if Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan get fired at the end of the season because they're going to be terrible, like everyone thinks they are, then this is the new worst franchise in football. Move over, Cleveland, because they need stability. They need to give these guys time. 2015 was a facade. The weak schedule and players overachieving, that was the issues with this team. It gave a false sense of hope that 2016 this team could compete for the playoffs. And unfortunately, it was a harsh reality that Ryan Fitzpatrick was not a viable starting quarterback.
I agree. I mean, I think that Todd Bowles, if he ended up being fired, that would be such a disservice to him and the character, in his character and his integrity, and the fact that he's shown good signs of being an established NFL coach. He would have to start over. He'd probably likely have to go be a defensive coordinator again somewhere. Now, who knows if it'll come to that, and I think that if he ends up being fired and Maccagnan, then you obviously start pointing fingers at Woody again. But it's over the years, there's always been that one headline, that one Jetsy thing, maybe to compete with the Giants, maybe to make some sort of splash over the airwaves, some sort of fluff, if you will. Sure. I think of Tim Tebow. I think of drafting Christian Hackenberg. So things that probably didn't really need to happen. People still don't really know why they happened. Now, that kind of makes me feel like something else is going to happen. Now, I'm going to put this out there. You're not going to like it, but I think it's a possibility that the Jets consider giving Johnny Manziel another chance as a quote-unquote bridge quarterback, because they know they don't really have their quarterback yet. Let's be real. They're probably thinking next year in the draft. Would you agree?
I mean, you make some viable points. And the one thing I will try to put out but I mean, you can never say never in the NFL, is that I just don't believe the Jets would be willing to do something so stupid, I guess, lack of a better term.
Yeah, it is stupid. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, this Todd Bowles, Mike Maccagnan regime seems adamant about distancing themselves from the Ryan syndrome, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. No Johnny Football, Colin Kaepernick, all these guys have just too much drama, baggage, unwanted attention. You can put whatever label you want to on these kinds of players. And yes, the Jets don't have a quarterback, and still, the starter for 2017 is still very much up in the air. But this team is going to be awful. I anticipate a guy who just visited, Josh McCown, he left without a contract, as this, we're using this terminology, bridge quarterback.
Yeah.
I expect a veteran to be brought in. And let's address the quarterback position overall. Bryce Petty, at best, is a career backup. Okay, I'm sorry to crush any Jets fans' hopes that think he could be the future. He's not the future. He had his opportunities last season, and I know the roster wasn't the best, but that was essentially, outside of a few injuries, the same roster that the Jets went 10-6 with in 2015 and fell just short of the playoffs. So Bryce Petty's a career backup. Christian Hackenberg, you don't really know what he is. But to your headline point, they draft a quarterback in the second round, and many people thought he'd be available later in the draft. So now you have this unproven player sitting on the bench that already has the reputation of a RG3, let's say, a player that is already done for. They're already ready to give up on him. And that, to me, is puzzling. You got to see what the guy has. But is he ready this year? Everyone that I've talked to says he's not going to be ready this year. So they're going to bring in a Josh McCown, and hopefully not a Johnny Football or a Colin Kaepernick or a player of that ilk.
Josh McCown has sort of embraced that role as an around-the-leaguer, and yeah. I kind of feel bad for him. He's never in a great situation, but he seems totally fine with it, especially because he gets to play. But
he gets to play, and he gets to collect those million-dollar paychecks. I'm sure that makes it a little easier to swallow.
Exactly. Before I let you go, I got a couple more questions. One,
sure.
What's your message to the Jets fans?
My message to the Jets fans, and I just stay patient. And I know that's a hard thing to do in the middle of a 7-year playoff drought, but believe in the Bowles McCagnan process. I believe in it. The purge cleaned this team. The team that suits up in September is going to look a lot different than the team that you've seen in the years past. But that's okay. This is best for the team. They've got a young nucleus. There are some positives with this team. I like the wide receiving core, Quincy Enunwa. Jets, in their illustrious history, have not had an illustrious history of hitting on those later round picks. Quincy Enunwa, a 6th-round pick, he is starting to develop and come around. That's another player you like. A Robbie Anderson. Some of these late undrafted free agents or late round picks are starting to blossom for the Jets. A Sherrone Peak, a 7th-round pick last year. So you have a young nucleus of talent on the team, not enough blue chip players to make a difference in terms of a playoff run, but enough of something to build around. So they've got to be patient, and that's the key here. And we talked about the quarterback position just a minute ago. A guy I have the highest draft grade on is Deshaun Watson. Mm. And if the Jets have the same grade I do on Deshaun Watson, Ooh. He will be the 6th overall pick if he's available. And I know the Jets have this propensity for drafting quarterbacks every year, from Bryce Petty to Geno Smith to Christian Hackenberg. We could go through the list. But Deshaun Watson could be the franchise quarterback, and you could plug him on the bench, and hopefully he'd be ready. But again, I initiate for the fans to have patience. Even if a Deshaun Watson is drafted, I would assume that he would ride the bench for the year and let a Josh McCown be ready to go, so when the team is more stocked and ready for next season, they'll be ready to plug and play their guy.
If I were a Jets fan, my doubts wouldn't be with Bowles and McCagnan. My doubts would be with their boss. My doubts would be with Woody Johnson, who seems to sort of make these abrupt decisions too early. And I think drafting Deshaun Watson might be something they do too early. I don't know. That's just me. But before you go, lastly, can you tell me a little bit about Sports War Radio?
Absolutely. Some of you may not know, our boy Anthony Beers is a part of Sports War Radio. And what it is, essentially, folks, it's a community of podcasters. So there's podcasters all over the place on a variety of different mediums. It doesn't matter if you're starting out right now, if you're thinking about joining podcast, if you want to give it a chance. What I'm trying to do is make podcasting affordable. I'm trying to create a networking atmosphere. I've been working in the radio business for the last several years, and I would like to believe that I can provide a unique experience. I could provide expertise and help sponsors grow and develop, help shows grow and develop. And then I can help you get sponsors to try to get your shows paid for. And I just kind of get you through the process. So once you go out on your own, you have a solid base and foundation to work with. So if anyone is interested in podcasting or joining the network and learning more about Sports War Radio, you can email me, boygreenespn@gmail.com, and also tweet me or Facebook me. It's both the same. Just search boygreen25 on Twitter, @boygreen25, and I'll be able to provide more information. But I want to make podcasting affordable for the world and help them develop and understand better how to do what they love to do.
And I can obviously attest to that and say that Paul does that extremely well. Paul, thank you for the time. I'll talk to you soon. Have a great night, man.
Yeah, you too. Appreciate it, man. Anytime.
Now, to wrap up this show, firstly, I want to say that I don't think the Jets should draft Deshaun Watson. That was like the last thing that I wanted to kind of disagree with Paul with, but I wanted him to get his spiel in there as well. I think drafting Deshaun Watson this year would be a bit disastrous, but I also don't think he'll be available. I'm in my last minute here of the show, and I want to end with one sort of hot take. Everybody in the NBA is debating the MVP argument, Russell Westbrook or James Harden. James Harden is dominating now as a new point guard, getting his assists. Mike D'Antoni's revitalized in Houston. Russell Westbrook's a triple-double machine, but the Thunder aren't that great a team. Let me just say, why not Kawhi Leonard? I understand that he doesn't put up the points, but he puts up the defensive numbers, and you can't underestimate his value on the defensive end. Now, no one wants to talk about that in the MVP discussion, but I think he makes the Spurs a championship contender, and I don't see Houston or Oklahoma City winning a championship. That's just me. I'm Anthony Beers. You can follow me on Twitter @AnthonyBeers. Real clever, I know. This was Sports Talk 1240. Next, we have Andy Sukoff in the 9 o'clock hour. Thanks for tuning in. This was Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB AM Radio.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.